From time to time in this program, we've talked about the community of owls in Forest Park. Amateur naturalist Mark Lenshaw has been observing the owls for a dozen years now. He watches them closely, close enough to recognize them, to name them. He also shepherds groups to watch the birds and what he calls owl prowls. He blogs about them and lectures, too. We welcome Mark Lenshaw back to the studio. Great to see you again.
Thank you, Don. Great to be here. Real honor and pleasure.
And you're getting out your snuggies because you're going to do an owl prowl tonight. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. First one of 2018. And one of the things I've learned a lot about is how to dress for different types of weather, especially the cold.
Well, you'll have that tonight. I'm sure you've figured that out.
Yes. Yeah. My first year, definitely there was a learning curve, but I've learned quite a bit since then.
And you did 90 of these prowls last year?
Yes, a record-breaking year. Each year, I keep breaking my own records, but 2017 was really special. 90 jumped just a little ahead of the 70 I'd done in 2016.
Well, obviously a lot of interest in the owls in Forest Park. I assume all is well. I mean, you've cataloged them for now a dozen years. It's an anniversary for you.
Yep.
Is all well with our friends in the park?
As of about 6 o'clock last night, yes. And my first goal every night when I go out there is to make sure that everything is all right. Mm-hmm. My overarching goal every night is to count heads. And sometimes I'll see one and then I'll hear the other, or I'll see them both relatively quickly. And other nights, it might take me 55 minutes to see or hear one for the first time. And that challenge is one of the things that keeps me coming back night after night.
Let's just remind our listeners of this community that you've been following. We've got Charles, of course, is the main character, but just give us a quick synopsis of this group.
Certainly. Charles is the male. I've been studying this entire time, and he's had three mates. The first one I saw him with was the amazing Sarah, and they had 23 owls together in 10 years. Sadly, she died in July of 2015. He courted with a few females in September of 2015. Didn't work out with them, but a third one showed up in October 2015, and she became his new mate, who I named Olivia. But she got shoved out in April of 2016 by his current mate, Samantha, who showed up and very quickly shoved out Olivia. So now Samantha has been there for a little over 20 months, which is quite a bit of time, but nothing quite compared to the 144 months that I've been studying Charles.
And any owlets with Samantha?
Not with Samantha. She attempted nesting last year, but she was only in a nest spot for a little under a week, which is not nearly enough time for successful nesting. Just incubating the eggs alone averages 33 days for great horned owls.
Yeah. Let me back up just a little bit and clarify a couple of things, Mark.
So,
you said that he was courting with a – how do owls court?
Basically, it's a lot like how any animal courts. There's communication, patterns and behaviors. Basically, they hoot together in a duet. The male might fly around and show some of his prowess. He might bring the female food. I primarily saw duets. And the first female he courted with, they duetted together for about 3 weeks, and then she was gone. And the second one showed up, and they had a great duet the first night, and then 3-4 nights later, she was gone. It was like they had a great first date and then downhill from there.
Do we have any understanding of why these relationships didn't mesh?
It's possible. The first one, definitely, I noticed something about the first courting female. She seemed perhaps on the young side. She was very large, very beautiful, but she seemed a little clumsy. She may have even been a first-year bird. And Charles he's quite the catch, both himself and his amazing territory and habitat in Forest Park. And that's a very big deal. So I think after Sarah, he has the right to be very picky.
Well, you say that Samantha drove out Olivia. How is that accomplished?
Well, Olivia was not helping matters. She, in March of 2016, she began to perch away from Charles, sometimes a few hundred yards away, sometimes over a half mile away. And some nights I could not find her at all. And then she would come back. So sort of she was creating kind of an opening. And I think Samantha just saw this opening, took advantage of it. And then through very intense hooting at Charles and Olivia, she was able to drive Olivia out. And we have not seen or heard Olivia since April 13th, 2016.
Now, what might she have done? Might she have left the park altogether and found another place to live?
That is a very likely scenario, and that is my hope, that she's doing well, thriving well. Most likely not in the park. The park is quite large, but their great horned owls require a pretty large amount of territory.
You know, I mentioned to this to you the other night. We met at a gathering. Mm. I have moved to the Lafayette Square area, and I saw one in Lafayette Park during the daytime.
That's
it was
fantastic.
Very clearly a great horned owl. I mean, I've seen enough of your photographs to know that.
Good.
You were surprised when I mentioned that.
I was surprised, but in a good way. I've seen great horned owls all over the St. Louis region, everywhere from big parks like Forest Park and Tower Grove to people's backyards. My good friend Brenda Henty first showed me the great horned owls that she studies. She also studies Charles and Company with mm-hmm. me. But they were in her backyard in St. Anne. I've seen them in yards and smaller parks, and almost any place that will work for them, they will take advantage of it.
I'm surprised that they decide to reside so close to us humans. You know, we're noisy. There are a lot of things I think they would find objectionable about being around people.
They do, and people often remark when I say, oh, on a prowl we need to be quiet and careful, and they'll say, well, aren't they used to all this stuff going on in Forest Park? And I point out the very important difference between background noise and in-your-face noise. Mm-hmm. And I think we all can relate to that. We all get used to various background noises, but, oh, something spikes up loud and unpleasant and uncomfortable, we take notice of it and may not be happy about it.
Do Charles and Company know you? I mean, you're out there a lot and you're around them a lot. Do you think that they recognize you?
At the most, I would say it is an element of recognition. I have had a few moments of feeling knowledge beyond recognition. But at the most, I would really say it is recognition based on what you were just saying, frequency and longevity. But more than those two things, it's how I conduct myself. Mm-hmm. We are guests in the owl's territory. An amazing thing about Forest Park is that 13 million people visit Forest Park every year. Yeah. But no matter what we do in the park, whether it's visiting the art museum, having a picnic, looking at owls, we all finish the same way. We pack up and go home. With the owls, it is their home. We need to be good guests. So I really try to be a good guest and stay quiet and camouflaged. And I've gradually gotten closer to them, but that's something I've done over a very long period of time.
Tell me what a prowl is like. I've threatened to join you sometime, but never have really had the occasion to. I will one of these days. But what are they like? What goes on?
First, we have to find a day and time that works for everyone. We meet about an hour 15 minutes before sunset, and I send my contact for the prowl, whether it's a parent or a teacher or just a person leading a group of friends, a very detailed email about what to wear, what to bring, what not to wear, what not to bring. And then once we meet, we go over a few additional ground rules, and we head out. And as we head out, I teach them about great horned owls, their natural history, and I also connect it to the individual histories of these individuals. And then we start to look for them. And as we look for them, I explain more about great horned owls. And as we find them and begin to watch them, I interpret their behavior.
And people have to be very clearly instructed as to how to act. I mean,
Yes. You
want an orderly crowd.
An orderly crowd. I limit prowls to 10 people. Smaller groups are better. We can generally get a little closer to the owls and things like that. And they're a blast. Last year, the popularity of owl prowls just took off. Basically, since the spring, I was booked up about 6 to 8 weeks in advance.
I'm going to read a tweet here from Jacob. He's asking a question that I've asked before, and you have not answered it for me. So let's see what you do for Jacob. Where's the best spot in Forest Park to spot the owls, and which time of day?
The best time of day is about an hour before sunset. That's when we meet for prowls, and that time of day is not picked out of a hat. That's when these owls are starting to get active. Great horned owls are nocturnal, both night active and also crepuscular, one of many words I've learned studying owls. And crepuscular means active at the edge of day and night. Mm-hmm. So I can often go out and find the owls at noon, but it's not very interesting because they're asleep. Now, as to the where, I'm not from Missouri, but I've come to, in my 22 years living here, I've come to respect and enjoy the ethos of the Show Me State. Jacob, Don, everyone, if you show me that you're serious and you come out on a prowl, I will show you where.
Yeah. I've spent time looking for them on my own. I must tell you that, and I think I found them. But you don't want people traipsing around without being under the proper kind of guidance.
Exactly, and that's people are often very kind and polite, and they'll say, "Oh, can we come back?" And I'll say, "Look, it's not my yard. It's Forest Park. It belongs to all of us." But again, we want to be good guests, and unfortunately, bad things can happen. It just takes one person doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, and unfortunate developments can happen.
Why are they called the great horned owl? They don't have horns.
They don't have horns, but they've got these two little things on their heads that could be interpreted as horns, and they are tufts. And this name horned is tricky because there are other owls that also have tufts, and some of them have names like short-eared owl and long-eared owl. But they're not ears, they're not antlers or horns. They're tufts, and these tufts are just groups of feathers. Scientists do not have a clear agreement or understanding on what tufts are for. Thoughts include camouflage, identification, deception, subterfuge. The great part of their name comes from their incredible beauty and immense size. They are the third tallest owl in North America and the second heaviest.
And what would the weight and the size then be?
2 to 5 pounds and between 18 and 25 inches long. And like most birds of prey, hawks, owls, eagles, vultures, falcons, females are larger than males.
And they're great hunters. And the thing in our conversations in the past, the thing that always amazed me is, we're talking about something that's 5 pounds. It can take on a raccoon or a swan and successfully subdue it, if you will.
Yes. About 6 to 8 weeks ago, I saw Samantha go for a raccoon and knock it straight out of the tree. She still came away empty-taloned, but she went for a raccoon and they're known to eat them. I've seen them go after great blue herons. They're incredibly powerful with huge talons that close with almost 30 pounds of pressure. The talons are so powerful at times they can break bones and puncture organs.
Mm-hmm. And who are the predators that would go after an owl?
Well, that's a timely question. In November, I saw two very close interactions with bald eagles, which are about a third bigger than great horned owls. And I saw two interactions with bald eagles and the owls that I study. And I've read two instances of bald eagles killing and eating adult great horned owls, pardon me. And it was fascinating to watch the eagles and the owls close by. You could tell the owls were wary at the least and at the most frightened. Samantha, both times, you could tell, was very unnerved by the presence of adult bald eagles.
Is this unusual to have one bird attack another? I mean, I can understand the eagles going after rodents or what have you on the ground and the owls doing the same thing, but going after each other, that seems unusual to me.
Food is food. Birds do go after other birds. In fact, bald eagles, a big part of their diet is fish, but also a big part of their diet is waterfowl. And great horned owls eat birds ranging from tiny songbirds to great blue herons and hawks and everything else. If an animal can catch something, they're going to catch it and make use of it. It's not cannibalism in the pure sense of the word.
We have an email from Madonna here that I'll read to you. She's in Crestwood. How can I attract great horned owls to my house in South County? Will they use a nesting box? If so, what size or shape is necessary?
Excellent question, Donna. Thank you. The great horned owls can and will respond to nesting platforms and nesting boxes. Like any nest box or nest platform, it is not a case of if you build it, they will come. If you build it, they might come. If you build it, no one might come. And if you build it, someone else might come. Habitat adjustments really depend on the individual unique habitat. There's no firm and fast rule that says, oh, do X, Y, and Z. It's, well, what's your area like, and let's go from there. Nest box plans are available online for a number of different size owls, including great horned owls. And I actually have seen a successful nest platform here in the St. Louis area.
We have been reading recently about the snow owls coming to this area. Apparently, they're having a habitat problem, finding enough food in their natural habitat. Are you familiar at all with them, and have any advice for those of us who might like to see them as well?
Sure. Oh, yes. I'm going to give you a small correction, Don. You're not the first person. Snowy owls.
Snowy owls.
I want to add the Y to it. Snowy owls and great horned owls are actually very close cousins. They're in the same genus, the genus Bubo. And even though snowy owls are larger than great horned owls are known to eat snowy owls sometimes. But snowy owls are a fascinating, beautiful animal. I haven't seen one in the wild myself yet. There have been some in the area. My best advice is to use the two online sources, eBird, which is a birding website where people report what they see, and then also the Missouri Birding Listserv, an older-fashioned but very effective email listserv. Called MoBirds, and that's a great way to find out what's going on, not just locally, but regionally.
I haven't seen much recently from you and your blog.
Well, how much is my girlfriend paying you to say that? I am a bad blogger. One of the tricky things about doing so many lectures, 55 mm-hmm. lectures last year and 90 prowls, is that along with a full-time job, I haven't cracked that nut of good, frequent owl blogging, but I have been doing more on my YouTube page, and there's a direct link from that on my blog. I've been posting videos much more regularly, and we've got some pretty cool and fascinating videos in the last several months.
I went through a number of them yesterday. They are fascinating. But these things are hard to spot. I mean, because at the time of day when you're out there, basically, when it's dark or getting dark,
yes.
They really are difficult to find. How do you find them? You just know that they're there?
Part of it is knowing where they go. I quickly began to name the different trees that they use when I began to study them. I have now over 50 trees named that they use regularly. Now, some of these spots vary by season, and it's not, oh, here's my two spots for the fall and two for the summer, but, oh, here's my 10 spots or my 15 spots or my 20 spots. And, yes, some of these spots get used over and over and over, but some of these spots come and go. There are so many new perch and roost sites used this summer that I named at least 5 new trees. So how do I find them? ESL, not English as a second language. I hope I show a modicum of fluency, but experience, skill, and luck. And the variation, I cannot stress that enough. I did a prowl recently where we couldn't find Charles, we couldn't find Samantha, and I said, okay, we need to expand our search area. And we walked right past them. They were in a very well hidden pine tree that I don't think I've ever seen Samantha in this group of pine trees, and I haven't seen Charles there in months, if not years.
What is the life expectancy of an owl? Charles has been around for a while.
He's been around for a while, and he's at least middle-aged. There's so many things we know about great horned owls, or the most widespread commonly found owl in North America, but there are many things we do not know yet, including average age. We know a record age for a wild great horned owl is right around 30 years old.
30.
So Charles is, given that I've studied him for 12 years, they generally don't have young until they're 2 to 3, and he was having young the first year I began to study him. He's at least 14 to 16, 15 to 17. But is he 22? Is he 28? If I could ask Charles, any of the owls, one question, how old are you?
Really, that would be
The one question.
You wouldn't say, where is Olivia? Because she disappeared quite
That would be high up there, top 5. Yeah. But number one, how old are you? A fact I have to be very frank with myself is that I'm probably on kind of the downslope of my time with Charles. The longer that I study him, the less time we probably have together, as it were. So every day is just a joy and a delight to observe and study these owls.
What got you into this, Mark? I mean, you were really into it. This is I almost want to say obsession. Maybe that's too strong a word.
No, obsession is too mild a word. Obsession, addiction. one way you show that you're getting very obsessed with owls is if you dream about them, and I regularly dream about owls. My interest in this has two seeds. One, I've always been into wildlife ever since I was a very young boy. And then moving to St. Louis in 1995, I've always lived close to Forest Park, but it wasn't until the early 2000s that I realized I barely know Forest Park because I barely go to Forest Park. Mm-hmm. And that was quite striking and rather embarrassing. And I thought, let's change that. And at that time, that interest in wildlife was really bubbling up to the forefront. So let's get into the park, get to know the park, and let's get to know its wildlife. And I fell in love with the park and its critters, and then finding these owls, man, that was pouring gasoline on a fire.
Tell me about finding your first owl in Forest Park.
I literally walked right past them. It was a long day at work, and I lived at one end of the park, your former end of the park, and worked on another. And I said, it's a tough, long day at work. I'm just going to decompress, walk through the park. And it was such a long day at work. By the time I left, it was already getting dark. And I'm going through this natural area of the park, and I pass this large dead tree, and I keep walking, and I hear a hooting. And I think, hooting, it's getting dark. It has to be owls. I'm going to go back. And in that dead tree are the two great horned owls, Charles and Sarah.
You know, you talk about the other critters in Forest Park. There's quite a variety, isn't there not? Just talk a little bit, the man who is into wildlife. What else can people find in Forest Park?
One of the things I always say to Forest Park goers is that there's a lot of wildlife there, and definitely go look for it, but you're not going to see everything every time. Case in point, coyotes. I had never seen coyotes until I went to Forest Park. And my first year or two going to Forest Park, I had a number of coyote sightings. I haven't seen a coyote since 2009. So one of the ways you see wildlife is you just have to get out there frequently. Red foxes were a bit of a sore subject for me because there I am in the park 300 nights a year. I didn't see a fox until 2009. And then a couple of years ago, I had a great winter and spring of seeing foxes in Forest Park, and I haven't seen one since. But you keep going.
It does beg the question, what are they doing there? Because the park is surrounded by a lot of heavy traffic. How do they get in and out? Or once they're in, do they just stay there?
Some animals come and go. For instance, white-tailed deer are seen occasionally in Forest Park, but they're rarely there beyond several weeks. Generally, something more aquatic, it's thought that they come into the park via the River De Pere, which, of course, flows under the park. And more terrestrial animals, say your white-tailed deer, coyotes, foxes, it's thought they come in via the roads and the Metrolink tracks.
Well, only a few seconds left. Should we advise people not to bring their small dogs into the park when the owls are about?
You can bring your small dogs, just keep them leashed.
Very good advice because they'll take a dog.
Yes, very true.
They will take a small dog.
Oh, yeah. I was out there the other night, and this gentleman had his small dog running around loose, and you could see the owls just like, should we roast it, flambé it? How should we cook it? And I said, please leash your dog. There's an owl right there.
Mark, thank you so much for being with us. Always a pleasure. We'll put information about your website on our website so folks can learn more about you and the great horned owls. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Great to be back.
Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.